Blog Talk Radio.
Life, growth, and wellness.
Together each week, we first get centered and anchored in some affirmative thoughts. And I have one that I have prepared for tonight, but just as I was turning on, I found something else which was more appropriate. It's called A Precious Gift. Our children, be they grown adult children or newborn babies, are precious gifts. God has given the parents the task of caring for these precious commodities. They are our precious cargo. It is also the duty of the village to care for our babies. In times past, the elders of the community willingly and willfully aided in the care of the children. But something changed. And you can find these days elders who are not prepared to help with the youth or elders who are not so willing to assist. Our children are precious gifts, even when they do not behave in a precious manner. It is still our responsibility to help care for the small children. The community must return to a state of knowing that each must take a role in creating the vision we have for a better society. The village elders have the wisdom and skill to assist. However, they must be welcomed into the role as a respected and valuable entity in the raising of our children. I thank God for the children. I thank God for my role in helping to encourage and strengthen them. I thank God for a community of folks who willingly give freely of themselves to improve the lives of our precious gifts. And because we choose to do so, let us honor our ancestors, all those who have gone on before us. Silent, we call out their names as we pay tribute to them with absolute love, respect, and honor. Today, I honor all ancestors with sincere gratitude and appreciation. We pause and remember they are our way shores, our loved ones, and our truth. Without them, we would not exist. Ashe, ashe. So it's all about love. It's all about life. It's all about wellness. The mission here on Love, Life, and Wellness is to uplift ourselves, to truly love ourselves, and to be genuinely involved in our holistic wellness. Tonight's show takes a deep look at the wellness and the life and the love of our community. Tonight's show is called Saving Our Girls, Young, Gifted, Black, and Depressed. Our special guest is a young professional female, Lauren Carson. She's the executive director and founder of Black Girls Smile Incorporated. Lauren comes to tell a story about the reality of our young females being depressed. She was diagnosed at the tender age of 15 of being clinically depressed. So what did that look like and feel like for her? What were the resources and help available to her? And how did she manage to recover and get better? Why did she create Black Girl Smile? So, audience, you are invited to join in the discussion. All comments are welcomed, and every voice will be heard with complete acceptance and no judgment. So if you are on the line, you can just press 1, and that will alert us that you want to speak. Or otherwise, you can call in on 516-531-9819 and press 1 to alert me that you want to speak on air. So you're listening to Life, Love, and Wellness, The Sandy Rogers Show. That was called The Power of the Rose, and that was written by me and performed by my nephew, A.K. Anthony, A.K. King. That was a blast from the past, and I just wanted to share that with you because it helps to get us started and settled in on this show tonight. So welcome back to Life, Love, and Wellness, The Sandy Rogers Show. You know, you're always welcome to call and to chat online with us live if you would like. Otherwise, just call and listen in to the show and enjoy what we're going to be talking about tonight.
Sandy Rogers Knows Real.
I know a lot of you have heard about apple cider vinegar, and it's also referred to as ACV. And people wonder why it's touted as being a universal concoction that you can take for different things. And so it says that the secret lies in its apple-izing effect. And even though apple cider vinegar is acidic, like a lemon or a lime, it creates a perfect alkaline environment in your body that is the exact opposite of what diseases require to thrive. In other words, when your body is alkaline, there's disease cannot live in your body. The diseases need acidity in order to survive. So there's also some incredible concentration that naturally occurs in the vital nutrients that are in ACV. Raw organic apple cider vinegar is made from organic apples and undergoes a double fermentation process, which produces enzymes and preserves its health-promoting characteristics. So here are some of the most beneficial nutrients in raw organic apple cider vinegar. You've got potassium. That's essential for normal heart, kidney, and other organ and cellular function. It has iron, important for blood health. It has magnesium, vital to heart health as well. Enzymes boost chemical reactions in the body. Malic acid, that protects vinegar from viruses, fungus. Acetic acid slows the digestion of starch and inhibits bacterial growth. Calcium, you know, that's for your bone and your teeth. And pectin, it helps regulate blood pressure and cholesterol in ASH, and that maintains a healthy alkaline state in the body. So that ACV or apple cider vinegar is actually very, very healthy for you, and that may be something you want to consider to be a staple in your cabinet. So our topic today is saving our girls, young, gifted, black, and depressed. Our special guest is a young female professional, Lauren Carson. She serves in the role as executive director and is the founder of Black Girls Smile Incorporated. Lauren comes to tell a story about her reality of having been diagnosed at the age of 15 with being clinically depressed. What steps can a person take if they suspect either they or someone they know is experiencing depression? Who or what is most valuable to the young person? How do you get the young person to open up and discuss it? I wanted to share one other thing with you.
Sandy Rogers Knows Real.
I don't know if you guys have heard, but the U.S. government has approved, have given its okay for the production of GMO, genetically modified organism, in salmon. You hear me? The fish that's been created by the creator can now be manufactured in the laboratory and sold in the supermarket as salmon. All right, we better be on the lookout and know what we're getting into these days. This stuff is no joke, you guys. We're going to be having GMO meat after a while pretty soon. So let's just keep on and be vigilant in what we're doing, what we're learning, and what we're sharing. So you're tuned in to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. Audience, feel free to call in and talk with us. Press 1 to let me know you want to talk on air. That's if you want to, but you're more than welcome just to listen. We have with us tonight an excellent, excellent authority. She's young. She's gifted. She's full of wisdom. She's a young spirit. Her name is Lauren Carson. I met her at a women's conference at Spelman College several weeks ago. I was immediately impressed by her ethics of beginning on time. She was very, very professional, and she stayed focused on her subject matter throughout the whole course of her particular workshop. She taught us all about the reality and the severity of young black females with mental health issues. So let me read her bio and introduce her to your audience. Her name is Lauren Carson. Again, she is the executive director and founder of Black Girl Smile, Inc. She graduates with a BA in psychology from the University of Virginia. Lauren recently relocated from Brooklyn, New York, back to her hometown of Atlanta, Georgia. In 2012, Lauren founded Black Girl Smile, Inc., based on her personal mental health journey, struggled to find racial sensitive treatment and support. As the visionary and leader of BGS, which is Black Girl Smile, since inception in 2012, Black Girl Smile has made amazing headway and continue to towards establishing the organization as a premier mental wellness nonprofit. Lauren is currently a contributing blogger for the Huffington Post, regularly volunteers at Children of Bellevue. She serves on the New York Women's Foundation Grants Advisory Committee, and she was selected for the Gillibrand Women's Mentoring Initiative. Additionally, Lauren is certified in youth mental health first aid. Audience, ladies and gentlemen, I bring to you my friend, Ms. Lauren Carson. Lauren, welcome to Life, Love, and Wellness.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be on the show this evening.
I'm excited that you agreed. I wanted to, I know you have like the statistics that you share with us at Spelman, but I would like first for the audience to get to know you a little bit better. Would you mind telling us about your personal journey through mental wellness or mental health, what it was like for you?
Yeah definitely. Like you mentioned in the earlier portion of the show, I was diagnosed at age 15 with clinical depression. I had been having some issues, emotional issues and some behavioral issues prior to that, but it took a while for them to finally diagnose me with clinical depression. When I was first diagnosed, I remember that very day I Googled, like anyone would of my generation, depression, black girl, and I literally found nothing. And what that really created for me and set up for my mental health journey is I felt really isolated, ashamed, uneducated. I felt like I was the only black girl in America, in the world that suffered from clinical depression. If it wasn't on Google, I had to be the only one. And that was kind of the start of my mental health journey. Over the next maybe 10 years, I struggled to find the support, the resources, and to me, one of the more important aspects of it, the education, to aid me in leading a mentally healthy life. And when I got to college, things kind of came to a head. And it sounds so cliche, but I had to decide that I wanted to live. And for me, the only way to live was for me to lead a mentally healthy life. Clinical depression is something that I struggle with on a daily basis. And I had to put things in place and do things on a daily basis that were going to aid me in leading a mentally healthy life. So that's a little bit about my mental health journey and kind of what's brought me to this point over the last 12 years now.
You made a statement about it being a daily, or when you were in college, you made a choice mm-hmm. to live healthy, or that you wanted to live. So with that diagnosis of depression, the suicide or the the feeling of not wanting to live, that is a regular part of what you go through?
Yeah. I mean, some days are easier than others. I know that everyone at some point in their life struggles with emotional difficulties, whether it's loss of a loved one, a job, daily stressors in life, relationships. At some point, we all struggle with emotional difficulties. With mental illness, and specifically clinical depression, I struggle on a daily basis emotionally. And a part of me becoming mentally healthy was really taking note of what works for me and what aids me in leading a mentally healthy life. Things such as positive self-talk, positive thinking, replicating the things that I, you know, if I wake up each day and I find that meditation works for me, then that's something that I need to replicate when I'm feeling a little down. So, again, we all struggle with emotional difficulties at some point in our lives. With clinical depression and with mental illness specifically, that can be something that's a little more chronic.
So I hear you talk about, you know, looking on Google and letting that be your baseline, and your feelings, your negative feelings that you received because you were unable to find any resources on Google, and so you went to, you know, the shame of why you would experience those type of negative mental health. And so how in your the work that you do day to day now, currently, and for the last 12 or 15 years, so what are you finding that to be the statistically with the young women that you serve? Is the number increasing? Are the young girls more at ease with being able to find you and to know that you're there to be able to help them? How are they receiving your organization?
So since we were founded in 2012, we've gotten an amazing reception from everyone alike, especially young Black girls. You asked specifically, or you know, touched on kind of the statistics or numbers increasing. Are they rising? Yes. I will say that the statistics are going to be a little disjointed just because of a lot of the stigma that's related to mental health and mental illness in the African American community. We're not seeking help. And with us not seeking help, we're not included in the statistics as far as outpatient treatment, but we're also not included in the statistics for diagnosis. But with that being said, suicide rates have increased 233% among African American youth. That's 12 to 19. That includes male and female. That's an astounding amount for me over the last 15 years to look at suicide rates have increased that much. It's actually the third leading cause of death among African-American youth at this point. Also, specifically as it pertains to African-American girls, they have the highest rates of suicidal ideations and attempts. So even though these young girls may not be completing suicide, at alarming rates, they're thinking about suicide, contemplating suicide, and trying to commit suicide. So those are the real statistics that are extremely alarming and that we at Black Girls Smile are looking to address. We do focus more so on the early intervention piece. And the reason for that is, again, back to what I said before, a lot of Black people are not getting help. A lot of Black people are not getting diagnosed. So to just capture that diagnosed population, you're going to miss out on a lot of numbers that are really in need. So we work on that early intervention piece of providing support, resources, and education, which are the three main themes that we've identified as major gaps as it pertains to young African-American females and mental wellness.
And that is really astounding 233% increase. It's real, and was one of the points that I wanted to make, is that, you know, in the community, we have a tendency to look the other way and to think that it doesn't affect us. It's always for somebody else. And having this discussion with a couple of my friends at the gym, actually, this one young lady, I think she told me she was 30, she was like, I want my mom to listen to the program because, you know, I think that's probably some of what she had and was never able to deal with it, you know. And so even though your focus is on the young females, the young black girls, it can be also a part of the older woman's reality as well, and she just was never able to get help during those teen years. So I know we're speaking to a lot of people across the board, both female and males. And so,
mental health and mental illness, I wouldn't say it's necessarily a racial issue. It's something that is just now being addressed on many levels in the U.S., but also on a global scale. It's just something that people really don't talk about and really don't address. And what that also means is we don't know as much about it as we know about other illnesses. So we're kind of playing catch up at this point. But I will say a lot of what goes on, especially within the African American community, is the stigma, the taboo, the mistrust of the medical community runs really deep. That in many cases, you do need to provide culturally sensitive treatment and education for it to be heard. Like you said, this is not an issue that is specifically affecting just young African-American females. This is affecting everyone at alarming rates. But right now, to just handle it on a global scale, in my honest opinion, isn't enough. You also have to look at subgroups of how we can address things. Also, we hear all the time, PTSD, as it pertains to our veterans. That is another demographic that needs to be specifically targeted so that the treatment, the resources, the education can be provided specifically to that subgroup for it to be most effective. But it's also something that we just need to talk about more as society, as a community. We need to talk about mental health more. And there's been big pushes in the last, I would say, maybe 5 years within black churches to really kind of not necessarily get away from the let's pray, turn to God. I feel like if religion, if the church is something that grounds you, that helps you mentally, yes, but it's not the only answer when someone is experiencing mental health difficulties. And the black churches have joined forces with organizations such as NAMI, the National Alliance for Mental Illness, to really push efforts that kind of mold the two together and increase the awareness and the conversation and the dialogue surrounding mental health and mental illness, specifically in the African American community.
That's a good the church part is a wonderful thing because it helps to bring legitimacy, so to speak, to the existence of the mental health piece. So what would be some of the symptoms that we may look for or we may want to be on the lookout for, I'll reword it that way, with our young people or with people in general that may be a signal that, we may need to start having the conversation about, there's a difference. There's a different way that they can live versus, if they're sad all the time, if they sleep all the time. Can you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. There actually was a campaign that was launched recently that kind of outlines these general symptoms that people can look out for to assess if they are experiencing mental health difficulties or if some or a loved one, someone they know may be experiencing mental health difficulties. The campaign is called the Campaign to Change Direction. It's actually campaigntochangedirections.org. The First Lady, Michelle Obama, has gotten behind this and really pushed this campaign. But the five, you pledge to know the five signs of mental health difficulties through this campaign to change direction and change this dialogue. The five signs, and these are kind of general across many mental health difficulties. It does not indicate one disorder compared to another. But I'll go through them. Personality changes. If you notice someone is all of a sudden withdrawn, or even if someone is all of a sudden very hyper, and you know, normally their disposition is a little more calm. Major personality changes over a period of time, I would say, or through the DSM, it says about 2 weeks of personality changes is something that you would look for as a symptom. Agitation, so if it's uncharacteristic anger, anxiety, agitation, or moodiness. The third symptom is going to be withdrawal, so isolating oneself, someone that's normally very outgoing, they're normally engaged in sports or activities or, you know, hanging out with friends and family, and they're kind of withdrawn. That's another sign to definitely look for. Another one that I think people kind of overlook is poor self-care. If you find that someone's not showering or their hair isn't as kept as they normally would have it, this kind of lack of regard for appearance it can be another indicator of risky behavior that can indicate mental health difficulties. And the last one is hopelessness. This is one of the symptoms that I think people most gravitate to when they think of depression. So someone who kind of, again, going to the withdrawn, they seem very sad. They seem like the world is going to come to an end. They can't overcome their circumstances. They feel very overwhelmed. That's going to be another sign of potential mental health difficulties. And it can be a combination of these symptoms. It can be one of these symptoms. Most of the time, though, it's going to be a combination of these symptoms to indicate mental health difficulties. And again, I'll just go back through those. That's personality change, agitation, withdrawal, poor self-care, and hopelessness are going to be kind of general symptoms of mental health difficulties.
I hope you guys got that written down. That's excellent information. Thanks, Lauren, for sharing that with us. Do you have, go ahead.
I was going to say, hopefully everyone can go on and take the pledge, too. They provide a little more information on the website. Again, that's changedirection.org. They also have a PSA that Michelle Obama, First Lady, has on there as well.
Okay, I'm taking notes as well, so changedirection.org, and that's the campaign to change direction. So thank you for sharing that. Is there any way of knowing how many young lives or young females are suffering in silence?
Yes and no. The statistic that I pulled out earlier that states that young African American females have the highest rate of suicidal ideations and attempts. To me, that's very telling. But kind of directly looking at are they seeking treatment? Those statistics are a little harder to pull out because only 50% of African Americans, compared to our white counterparts, actually seek treatment, and only about 65% less likely compared to white counterparts to actually receive treatment. So with that being said, we do, as African-Americans and specifically as African-American youth, we do have higher rates of out of inpatient treatment, but outpatient treatment we're not utilizing to the same degrees that other racial groups are utilizing that. With that being said, you know, don't want to hop on any sort of soapbox, but there is some argument about the pipeline to incarceration and to our prisons. Many of the state institutions were closed down, and a lot of mental health difficulties are being seen in the prison system at alarming rates. I think individuals that are incarcerated are 2 times more likely to experience mental health difficulties than someone who has not been incarcerated. So again, the statistics are kind of a little disjointed, but we are able to pull some information out that really kind of captures specifically what we do with Black Girl Smile of focusing on young African-American girls. We've also, through survey methods, analyzed that only about less than 20% of young African-American girls report any knowledge whatsoever of what mental health is, what mental illness is, and what mental wellness is. So not only do young African-American girls have the highest rates of suicidal ideations and attempts, but they also, at alarming rates, have no knowledge of what mental health is and how it relates to their overall mental well-being.
Wow, that's fascinating. But then it also helps us to understand that we need to have these conversations more and more in our homes. You know, and as the elders in the community, we need to find a method to start having these conversations so that our young people, girls particularly, because that's your demographics there that you deal with, but all young people need to understand what mental wellness is, what that looks like, and we need to offer them some type of information and education. Do you travel across the country to help other areas, other cities to form organizations that's similar to Black Girl Smile? How do you network with other areas?
Yep. So currently we operate both out of New York and Atlanta. We do maintain a comprehensive mental health resource list that can be provided in other major cities as well. We're in the process of looking to streamline our efforts that we've accomplish in the Atlanta area and also in the New York area to expand to other larger markets as well. Because this is not just something that's happening to girls in Atlanta or girls in New York or girls in D.C. This is something that's happening across the country. And every single one of these young African-American girls and everyone need to be more educated, feel more supported so that they can lead a mentally healthy life. I do want to throw one other resource out there that I think kind of is relevant to the topic that you just discussed, is like having these conversations. There's so many misconceptions of how a conversation should go as it pertains to mental health and mental wellness, and often the terminology is kind of skewed, and we don't have a full understanding of what mental health is. When you hear mental health, I think people automatically go to mental illness. They think of homelessness. They think of someone talking to themselves in a corner. They think of a straitjacket. That is not what mental health is. Everyone has mental health. Mental health is simply your psychological and emotional well-being. Mental health affects your thoughts, your actions, everything that you do. Mental illness is the dysfunction of mental health. Just like with anything else, everyone has a heart, but then you have heart disease. There, you have other diseases that are off of that or dysfunction of the main well-being. And then mental wellness is just the state of wellness as it pertains to mental health, self-care, things that you can do to lead a mentally healthy life. So educating people on the terminology, how to have these conversations. And I think mental health first aid, and specifically the mental health first aid youth program, does a great job of educating the general public, teachers, school counselors, coaches, people who work with youth on the signs, the symptoms of mental health difficulties, but also how to have these conversations and how to support youth that may be experiencing a mental health difficulty. And again, that's mental health first aid, and they have a mental health first aid youth training. And if you go on their website, you can find training programs across the country that you can sign up and get certified as a mental health first aider. It's almost think of it as the mental health side of doing a CPR class. They'll teach you an acronym to help you work through and an action plan if you find that someone is experiencing mental health difficulties, whether it's an adult or a youth.
That's powerful. And so is that also the steps to wellness that's part of that mental health first aid training?
The mental health first aid training focuses kind of on the prevention and the assistance side of it. A little bit of early intervention, which is kind of what we do. I think of it as early intervention in that it educates other people on what mental health is and also having conversations. I'm actually certified as a first aid youth instructor, and I remember being in the course, and there's a portion where you talk about how to confront someone who you think is suicidal. And there were psychologists in the room. There were social workers in the room. And they ask people to raise your hand. Do you think asking someone if they are thinking about committing suicide will put the thought of suicide in their head? And I would say over half the room raise their hand. That is a complete misconception. Complete misconception. If you ask someone if they're thinking about committing suicide, you are not going to put the thought in their head. You're helping them, you are finding out if they have a plan, you are getting more information out of them, you're going to assist them, you can assist them, and they kind of go through those steps in the training program. But for anyone listening, you know, I'd like to break down that misconception. Asking someone if they're thinking about committing suicide or completing suicide does not put the thought in their head. It is a question that you should ask if you feel that someone is in danger of hurting themselves or hurting someone else.
And if you have someone that is constantly talking about suicide or texting about suicide or writing on their Facebook page, would that be that would also be a good lead in for you to have that conversation, correct?
Yes, most definitely. The thing is, what the training program stresses and what I would like to stress outside of the training program is, we are not licensed. If you're not a licensed mental health professional, you need to just triage the situation. And what I mean by that is you just make sure that the person is, you find the best way to monitor them and make sure that they are okay, and then help them access the appropriate resources so that they can get the help that they need. Specifically when you're talking about things such as Facebook actually has a portion of their site now where you can actually report a post or a person, and it will alert a service that this person is potentially suicidal and will reach out to them and see if they are okay. Facebook has been very proactive in that effort. The other thing that I would like to point out as far as crisis, scenarios, there's a new service that's out that you have the suicide hotline, and I can provide that number as well. And we also have the suicide hotline is going to be 1-800-273-8255. Again, that's 1-800-273-8255. There's also a new service, which is called the Crisis Text Line. Black Girl Smile actually has a partnership with the Crisis Text Line. Text is one of the biggest, if probably the biggest mode of communication specifically for youth. So youth are more comfortable. They have more access to texting these days. And the crisis text line allows you to text in 24/7 completely anonymously to get assistance with emotional issues that youth or an adult may be experiencing. To access the crisis text line, you just text START to 741-741, and that will connect you with a crisis text counselor. Both of those services, the suicide hotline, the crisis text line, both of those services can also provide referrals to help assist someone to make sure that you get the correct help. But I really, really, really want to emphasize, if you think that someone is in danger of hurting themselves or others, call 911. 911 is not just for a heart attack or, you know, someone going into labor. Call 911 for something if you think someone is potentially suicidal or you think that they're going to hurt someone else. That is always going to be the best line of defense.
Excellent. Whew, thank you so much, Lauren. We're going to take a short break so that we can digest some of all of this powerful, incredible information that Lauren is sharing with us, and give Lauren just a moment, and then we'll come back and continue this discussion. So we're just going to take a short break.
Mm-hmm.
That was Miss Alicia Keys, A Woman's Worth. Hello and welcome back to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. I thank you for being a part of our show tonight, and I hope you're getting as much as I'm getting out of this conversation, saving our girls, young, gifted, black, and depressed. Miss Lauren Carson is just swelling us up with so much knowledge. She is so full of so much wisdom. She's given us the crisis text line to operate, to give and to share with our young ladies. She's given us suicide prevention information and training programs, the mental health first aid prevention and changedirection.org and all stemming from this alarming increase of 233% of our young black girls thinking about and or committing suicide, and how that is just off the charts. So Lauren has cited some of the reasons why young ladies don't seek help, the stigma, the shame, the mistrust of the system, and as for herself, when she was diagnosed or going through some mental health issues, she used Google. That was what was appropriate for her at her age, and that was her baseline. And so when she didn't find anything there, that really sent her into a further shameful place. And so Lauren has been given us just, gosh, so much. And Lauren, so are the males affected in the same way? Or I know your organization deals primarily with the young African-American female, but do you have the numbers or have any idea on the males as well?
Yeah, so the 233% increase in suicide actually is all African-American youth. African-American males now have one of the highest rates of suicide completions. And a little bit about why I'm saying suicide completion opposed to suicide, suicide committing. When someone has completed suicide and you continuously say that someone has committed suicide, it's in some ways kind of opening up the womb. For someone to commit something, that means that they are kind of diving into it, that they're still in the midst of it. So for the family, for the loved one, you say completed suicide. So yes, young African American males have some of the highest rates of suicide completion, while young African-American girls have some of the highest rates of suicide attempts and ideations. Both numbers are alarming, but the difficulties that a young black male faces, especially with the climate and the things that we have going on today, are very different than the things that young African-American girls are facing. When you look at the way that young African-American girls and young African-American boys, and just breaking down gender in general, people tend to be, or youth tend to be more open, more accepting to learning to discussing, to engaging in the environment that is gender specific, especially when you're talking about such a sensitive topic as mental health, mental illness, and mental wellness. So no, we're not looking to exclude our Black boys in any way, shape, or form. In all honesty, I didn't want to bite off more than I can chew. And I'm a Black girl. I can relate to young Black girls that are experiencing or are susceptible to experiencing mental health difficulties because that is my story. That's my journey. That's what I know the most about. But a lot of people ask me, what about the Black boys? And they're definitely a demographic that is in need. As we continuously look to streamline our efforts of just focusing specifically on racially sensitive and gender specific treatment and resources and support, that is something that we are constantly evaluating, replicating for other demographics as well.
Yeah, that seemed like that would be a huge undertaking. I applaud you for the work that you're doing with our Black girls, period, because, from your own personal story, there was not resources available for you when you were clinically, when you were diagnosed, you know, with your mental illness. And so it's helpful that you have committed yourself to learning, to understanding, to getting the knowledge and being able to reach back in to help. So, no, I applaud what you're doing. I just wanted to bring that up to give an overall picture, not that you're excluding anyone or anything like that. Yeah.
No, most definitely. I mean, Black youth in general are struggling on many levels right now, especially mentally. I think that, you know, we need to give our Black boys a hug at every opportunity that we can, and our Black girls. My brother, he is the youngest of four. He is the last child at home with my mom. He's graduating this year. And just with the various things that we're seeing on the news, Trayvon Martin, Eric Garner, just watching the way that that affects our young Black males mentally is something that parents should definitely be aware of and be comfortable with having those conversations with your young Black males, because it is something that affects them to see impact of protests, of the way of police police mistreatment, mistrust. Is something that we definitely have to be aware of with our young Black males, but also with our young Black females. I also want to point out Terry Williams. Terry Williams is a mental health advocate. She's a writer, and she's based in the New York area. I had the pleasure of working with Terry Williams in New York, and she has a book called Black Pain, It Just Looks Like We're Not Suffering. And this book really does a great job of outlining the struggles that the African-American community has when it comes to mental illness. There's specifically a chapter that focuses on young Black males and the psychology behind the things that are happening during their adolescence that really shape their mental health and their mental well-being. And I think it's a must-read for parents, for them to just know what's going on as far as mental health in the African-American community, but also specifically young Black males as well.
Give the name of that again for me, Lauren.
It's Black Pain, It Just Looks Like We're Not Hurting. Terry Williams is, I would say, the mother of Black mental health. When something happens, this is the woman that they call that's on CNN or on NBC that's going on there and discussing whatever the topic is. She's extremely knowledgeable, and she talks about her own struggles with mental health, with mental illness in the book. And that's really kind of what drove her to speak out, to mentor, to bring a voice to this topic that no one is talking about. And she was one of the first people that really spoke up and said, hey, this is an issue. And it's something that people really need to pay attention to. The other person to kind of know as far as kind of pioneering Black mental health is B.B. Campbell Moore. July is National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, but July is Minority Mental Health Awareness Month, and it's named after B.B. Campbell Moore. You may have heard that name. Her daughter was actually on a Yala Van Zandt show this past season, and she talks a little bit about her mother. But she was one of the pioneers of really bringing a voice to Black mental health and specifically the Los Angeles area.
Thank you for sharing that. So what are some of the next steps for us?
My big thing that I push, because I think it's where we have to start, is education. Once people start to understand the terminology, what mental health is, what mental illness is, what mental wellness is, and how that all relates back to one another, that they're correlated, but they also are separate, people are more comfortable engaging in the conversation. I know we've focused on things such as suicide today. We focused on depression. We focused specifically on mental illness. But the big thing that I push with Black Girl Smile and just personally is everyone has mental health. And the best thing that you can do for yourself is to lead a mentally healthy life. That helps with your personal relationships. That helps with your career aspirations. It helps with your physical health. But to lead a mentally healthy life has nothing to do with mental illness. It doesn't have to do with depression. It doesn't have to do with suicide. We all have mental health, and we owe it to ourselves and we owe it to others for us to all lead a mentally healthy life.
That's a new way of thinking probably for a lot of us, to mentally healthy life, yes.
It is, and what people always ask me, what does that mean? For me, what that means is I evaluate on days that I feel the best, whether it's I'm most productive, whether it's I have the most energy, whether it's I'm the happiest. I take note of what happened during that day. From the second I woke up, what did I say to myself? Did I say something good? Did I say something bad? What's going to dictate that moment, but also that day for me? So to take note of the things that happen in your life that are positive, whether it's you wake up and you say a prayer, whether it's you wake up and you meditate, whether it's at the end of the day you journal, whatever it is that you need to do to lead a mentally healthy life, take note of those things and replicate them. And the things that you find are not aiding you in leading a mentally healthy life, cut them out. It could be food that doesn't make you feel so good. For me, it's negative self-talk, shutting that down right then and there. But really taking note of what you need to do to lead the best life. And for me, that directly relates to what do you need to do to lead a mentally healthy life.
So from your expert point of view, if there was a young person in the household and the adult is perhaps thinking about having the training to become a mental health first aid practitioner, so I'm a mental mm-hmm. practitioner, if they did something along the lines of just saying, okay, well, we're going to start leading a mentally healthy life, and so that the whole family or, whoever is involved in the house is in that, do you think that would be helpful, something just, to give that young person something to do actively while the adult is getting all of the training that they need, or?
Most definitely.
Okay.
When you first opened up today, you talked about it takes a village, it takes a community, it takes a society. We're not put on this earth to do things ourselves. It is something that takes a village and takes a society and takes a community. But the change has to start somewhere. And for you, for your family, whatever it is that can help everyone get on track is the most beneficial. If you have people that are in your corner, that are supporting you, that are on that journey with you, whether it's my family, we had productive hour. So one day, 1 hour each day after work, after school, we would turn everything off and we'd sit in the living room together, and all of us would do something different, whether it was my mom paying bills and me working on my computer and my brother doing homework. We all sat together and we had decided that this was something that we could do as a family that would promote mental health and mental well-being. It could be family dinner. It can be a family prayer. It can be family meditation. It can be going around the table and saying what was the best part of your day. But starting to put those things in practice, just those more positive aspects of life, of activities, of even the way that we talk to each other and express our feelings. If we do that in a more positive way, it tends to rub off, and it can be contagious.
It sounds absolutely wonderful to me. I like that whole suggestion, and that would be a part of that mentally healthy life. And so, you know, to maintain your mental wellness, that would certainly be the way that seems most productive to me. So I love that idea, you know. So even if there's no issues in the home, you can start that practice to build yourself and everybody in the home to making sure that they are experiencing mental wellness. I know one of the small things that I do, because I know how the young children, younger, are always, you know, on the phones. They're playing games or texting or whatever. And so when I take my granddaughter and her friends out to eat, one of my dinner table rule is there's no phones at the table, you know. And so
I love that rule.
Friends, yeah, they laugh, you know. And the moms would be calling, and, you know, they'd be like, but that's my mom. I said, well, she'll wait until after we finish, you know. And so mothers all know now. But, you know, that's what I do with my grandchildren. You know, I'm like, no, you know, that's not at the dinner table. We can't do that. I say, call me old school, call me whatever. But we need to start putting into place some of those practices that designate, you know, there's certain time frames for doing certain things. So.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, just increasing that communication. You know, I talked about text as the biggest mode of communication these days, but, you know, sometimes we have no idea what's even going on with our youth, whether it's a brother, whether it's a sister, whether it's a child, whether it's a grandchild. So, you know, I commend you on, you know, taking your granddaughter out and learning more about what's going on in her life and having those conversations, because going back to when we first talked about my story, as a young Black girl at the age of 15, I felt alone. I felt isolated. But what really pulled me out of it is I had family and friends that were going to make sure that I was okay. And there were other people that were invested in making sure that I was healthy. It wasn't just me. And these days it's so easy to have a youth that just goes in their room and closes the door and plays video games, or, you know, is on their phone or is out with their friends. There's increased pressures out there today. You know, a lot has not changed, going back to what I talked about when we're seeing Eric Garner, we're seeing Trayvon Martin. But things have changed in that there's increases in cyberbullying. You know, there's this hyper, comparison on Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat that kind of comes into play. But talking to the youth, talking to our young Black girls, talking to our young Black males, talking to our, you know, whoever it is, engaging them and finding out more about what's going on in their life and ways that we can support them is going to be the key to not only our success in relationships with them, but just in supporting them so that they can lead a mentally healthy life too.
Indeed, indeed. Lauren, I tell you, there seems like there's still so much more to talk about with this subject, because I know that it's an eye-opener for many people, just like it was for me when I first sat down in your workshop. I was just amazed with the numbers, with the statistics that you provided as to what the reality of this issue is within our community, you know, that our young people are facing. And so it can sadden you to know just the statistics, but it's also very heartwarming to hear of you and the organization that you put together and the sensitivity that you have to this particular phenomenon that's happening for our young black girls. And so, again, I applaud you and sincerely appreciate everything that you're doing. I know that it's a major undertaking to serve and to be of service to individuals. And so I just wanted to take time to say that once again.
Thank you. I appreciate your kind
words. Oh, sure. Oh, man. I know that it's a 24/7 job, and you're saving lives. That's what's so important, you know, that you're saving lives. So.
It's a heavy dose, but we try to provide all of the information, good and bad, with a smile. And, you know, ensure, again, that we emphasize, look, this isn't just about mental illness. This is about mental health. It's about mental wellness. It's about saving lives, but not necessarily in the same aspect that you may hear from other mental health organizations. We want to make sure that people are leading their best life. And that comes from early intervention, just making sure that people have the support, the resources, and the education that's necessary for them to lead a mentally healthy life.
Because I'm sure most people that are listening in, they know someone. It could be someone very close, you know, a family member, a brother, a sister, a niece, a nephew, a granddaughter, you know, that is having some issues. And, you know, we need to know, we need to become educated on the best line of defense or intervention to be able to help those individuals.
Definitely. Definitely. I appreciate you giving me the time and the platform to outline some of the resources that are out there, some of the signs that people can look for. And I would really just encourage people to be comfortable having those conversations. It really can be the difference for someone in the immediate, but it also can be the difference for someone long-term, whether it's just talking to them, whether it's helping them access resources, all of the above. It really can make the difference. And we as a society, specifically in the African-American community, we have to get more comfortable having these conversations, engaging in this dialogue. And I really applaud you, and I appreciate you for giving me the platform and the opportunity to, you know, express my views, to provide some of this information that hopefully some of the people that are listening, this can be helpful to them.
Oh, thank you, Lauren. Thank you, thank you. Was there any closing thoughts, comments, references, resources you wanted to share with the audience?
Just to check out our website, blackgirlsmile.org. We're in the process of confirming our planning for 2016 and have some great initiatives and programs on the horizon. So feel free to check out our website, and you can always email us as well at contact@blackgirlsmile.org. There's two S's in the middle. Again, that's contact@blackgirlsmile.org. If you ever have any questions, if you need assistance with anything, and again, we maintain a comprehensive mental health resource list. This is pre-screened African-American therapists in various areas across the country to make it a little easier on people when you're going through crisis and it's difficult to find a resource that's going to be most helpful. We've compiled some of that information for you to assist you with all the insurances and everything that they provide. So let us know if there's anything that we can do out there to help you. Follow us on social media, Black Girl Smile, on all social media platforms. And, again, I just appreciate you having me on this evening.
Sure, sure. It's my pleasure. And trust me, my pleasure. So if there's anyone that have a question, you need to let us know right away before we end the program. So do you have fundraising type of events or campaigns that you do, or how are you funded? Can the public help to support what you're doing?
Yes, most definitely. You can donate on our website. There's a donate link on blackgirlsmile.org. We also constantly have volunteer opportunities. We have the partnership currently with the Crisis Text Line, so if anyone's interested in becoming a crisis text counselor and helping out in that way, you can definitely reach out to us again at the contact at blackgirlsmile.org. Most of our funding right now is individual and foundation grants. But as we kind of ramp up our programming and our initiatives and expand, we will be looking to diversify our funding. So, you know, feel free to reach out to us at our website or at our email, and we would love to chat with you further.
Well, thank you. And I would encourage everyone that's listening, either on the computer, iPhones, iPads, laptops, telephone, whatever, to reach out and make a donation, especially going in toward the end of the year. You may not have donated as much money or made as significant contributions as you would like. Do that for Black Girl Smile. I would encourage you to do that. You see the type of impact that Black Girl Smile and Lauren is having on our youth, and our youth is our future. They're our leaders that will be taken on or taking over when we retire. So let's support the work that's being done that is making a significant difference with our young people. So again, Lauren, I mean, just from the bottom top and middle parts of my spirit, my soul, my heart, I just applaud you. I appreciate you. You are what we need. Your expertise just comes across as non-threatening. You open up with such a gentleness about the work that you do and doing what you're doing, and really thankful that you were able to see the need and to address the need in your organization. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate your kind words.
Yes. So we're closing up for this show, Saving Our Girls, Young, Gifted, Black, and Depressed. We have with us the incomparable Lauren Carson. She is the visionary, the founder, the executive director of Black Girls Smile. You can reach them at blackgirlsmile.org. They're on Facebook, Twitter, and all social media as Black Girls Smile. As Lauren said, that's two S's in the middle. And so let's support those organizations that are making a huge difference in our communities. And Black Girl Smile is definitely making a difference with our future mothers, our future leaders in the communities. And the welfare of our community is on the Black female. And so let's help Lauren and what she does with providing our support in whatever way that you feel that you can. So we appreciate you, everyone, for being a part of our show tonight. it has been truly, truly amazing to me. And so we have the resources, we have information, we have suicide prevention, we have a toll-free number for them, Terry Williams and her book, Black Pain. It just looks like we are not hurting. Phoebe Campbell Moore is another activist. We have the crisis text line. We have Steps to Wellness, the mental health first aid prevention training, changedirection.org. We have the five signs of our mental illness. And if you got or did not get all of the information that Lauren shared with us tonight, please, you can listen to a rebroadcast of this show. Learn, just listen over and over and over again until you feel comfortable. Perhaps it's your call to make a change in your family with someone that is going through some difficult changes in their life. So I applaud you. I applaud the work that's being done. And this is going to end our show for tonight. Thank you, the audience, for being a part here with us. And I started off the show tonight with one of my daily inspirational messages, and I just wanted to advise you that if you appreciated what was shared with you, I do those. There are daily posts, and if you go to Rev Sandy, that's RevSandy.wordpress.com, you can sign up and follow me, and they will be delivered to your email every morning so that when you awake, you open up your email and there's your inspiration for today. It's always positive. It's always uplifting. It's always affirming. So thank you, thank you, thank you for joining me today on Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. This is where we talk candidly about positive experiences, personal development, self-discovery, and holistic wellness. When we love ourselves, we cause no harm or danger to anyone, especially ourselves. We are at peace and harmony with all of humanity. So this is your host, Sandy Rogers. I'll see you next week. Have a wonderful, wonderful, happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy family or whatever it is that you do with your time on a holiday. May you forever live in divine wellness. Thank you. Good night. Life, love, and wellness.